Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
In a typical month, the average American household throws $120 in the trash. Not in cash, of course, but the USDA says that's the average dollar value of all the food we pay for, but never eat. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Whether we buy more than we need, mess it up during cooking, or find it spoiled by the time we get around to eating it, that wasted food is bad for both our budgets and the environment. We can all do better, and Natural Resources Defense Council staff scientist Dana Gunders is here to tell us how. She specializes in food waste reduction, and she's just published the Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook, a guide to eating well and saving money by wasting less food. Dana, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much for having me.
I was surprised to learn that consumers waste more food than farmers or grocery stores. Why do we throw so much away?
It's true. Actually, consumers make up the biggest portion of food that goes to waste. And it's hard to see because it happens in little bits and pieces everywhere. You know, it's the lettuce that goes bad in your fridge, the science experiment in the back, or the potatoes we leave on the breakfast platter. But they all add up with so many of us doing it to be a huge portion of food going to waste.
You know that most of us were never taught to cook the way our grandparents did, right? They knew all about using up every single edible calorie. And I was thinking about the fact that, you know, today when we look up a recipe online or we watch food TV or we read a cookbook, we're always told to use only the very best, very freshest ingredients, which is nice, but it could mean throwing away a lot of perfectly edible food.
It's true. Certainly with kind of food media out there, there seems to be a feeling of perfection around food. But I actually think that in our own lives, that's not always the case. I think for a lot of us, you know, we're just trying to get dinner on the table and it doesn't have to be perfect. And using everything that we can really help be efficient in our kitchens and, you know, with the money we're spending on food.
So one thing we could do collectively is to create less surplus food. What's involved with that?
Well, so there's really, you know, when we think about food going to waste, there's kind of a framework I like to use similar to with recycling. We hear often reduce, reuse, recycle, right? And the same thing really applies to food. So the most important thing is to not have so much extra that it winds up going to waste. And there's all sorts of things that we can do in our homes, in our daily lives to reduce the amount of food that we're wasting. For starters, being really smart when we're shopping is a very important part of it, because when you're shopping, that's really when you're committing to the food. And things, you know, common things like using a shopping list and planning your meals can really help. And for those of us who are less organized like myself, there are some shortcuts such as just sort of looking back in your shopping cart and trying to identify when during the coming week you're actually going to eat the food in it. Because if you can't identify that time, then you might be better off not buying it that week.
I think that's a great point, because I think a lot of people have had the experience, I certainly have, of feeling super ambitious about what you're going to cook while you're shopping. And then, you know, when real life gets in the way and you just have to get dinner on the table, you know, we don't necessarily feel up to preparing those foods. One good thing to know is that just about everything can be frozen before it goes bad.
It's true. Yes, we are. Many of us are very aspirational when we're in the store about the week ahead, and then life happens. And by Wednesday, we're just throwing a frozen pizza in the oven, right? So I think being realistic when you're in the store helps. But absolutely, when you've passed that point and you're sitting there with some food, you're not sure what to do. Freezing food is an excellent way to essentially push the pause button on that food. And if you're just going to pop it in the freezer for a few days, it doesn't need to be a big process. You literally can just pop it in the freezer. And that can be true for your leftovers, but also for things we often don't think of freezing, like milk or cheese, tomato paste, you know, the other half of the pasta sauce in the jar. Those can all go in the freezer and be just fine coming out.
And I take it the way we put it in and, you know, labeling ends up being really important, because things start to look alike when they're all thrown into similar containers.
Right. Well, certainly going into the freezer is not the end of the story. You have to remember to take it out and use it. Absolutely. Labeling, putting things in clear containers. Some people like to put a whiteboard actually on the outside and keep a list of what's in there. And so you don't even have to open the freezer to decide what you want to take out of it. And then being sure to try to remove all of the air. Some things are best double wrapped. Other things like vegetables, if you're going to keep them in there for a long time, do better when they're blanched. But tightly wrapping things can also help avoid freezer burn.
So there may be people who feel like, and I don't think this is necessarily tied to income, but some people might think, well, I can afford to throw this away. It's not that much. It's not worth that much money. But you have a sobering chart in the book that I think will really stick with me of how much water goes into producing certain foods and beverages that we consume. And it seems like if you're gonna waste anything, don't let it be meat, according to the amount of water it uses.
It's true. I mean, we invest as a country about 70% of all of our water into agriculture. So when we're not eating that food, it's a terrible use of those resources. And meat does require a lot more resources than some other foods. So, for instance, when you throw out a hamburger, that is the equivalent of taking a 90-minute shower in terms of how much water it required
to
produce that. Yeah, it's amazing. Whereas if you throw out an egg, it's really, I think it's an 11-minute shower is the right number.
Which is still kind of a long shower, but it's something to think about. When you are, you take food home, there are people who just can't stand the idea of eating leftovers. Like they just have a, you know, there are people who just feel like the food must not be so good. Is there a way to get over that kind of emotional block that I know some people have?
Well, you know, I think it's a luxury to feel that way, really. It's one of the sort of benefits of having food be so abundant in our society. But it's true. Some people are very turned off by leftovers. My recommendation is that if you're one of those people, then, you know, your job in not wasting food is to really try hard to not have leftovers. So if you're going out to eat, maybe sharing something or, really asking the server about the portion sizes before you're ordering. If you're cooking at home, being really careful about how much you're cooking. Of course, I think leftovers are like a treasure trove. And to me, they just mean less work for the next day. So I have trouble understanding it, to be honest, though I know it's true for some people.
I've got 4 kids at home, so I've been known to take someone else's leftovers if they're just going to leave them on the table. I've boxed up their leftover food and brought it home to my family. let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Allison on the line in Dallas. Hi, Allison. Allison, are you with us?
I am.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
So when I was listening, you were making the comments about how consumers are the biggest producer of food waste. And I know particularly I have 3 stepsons and my husband and I, so there's 5 of us, but you know, our tastes vary so differently that I find it really difficult to even shop at the grocery store and buy things for 1 or 2, and we end up throwing out an immense amount of food. And you know, an example would be a bag of potatoes is less expensive than buying potato per pound, or a mixed medley of vegetables is much more expensive than buying an entire head of cauliflower. I can't even find, you know, a half loaf of bread because some children like one kind, some like another. So I didn't know if there was even a place in the market for the stores to be able to help us, basically help them.
That's an interesting conundrum, Allison. Any thoughts there, Dana?
Yeah, and I often hear that from people who are living as single people as well, that it's really difficult to buy a portion small enough that you cannot waste the rest of it, right? So absolutely, I do think there is certainly a role for the food industry to play in creating portion sizes that really speak to the levels at which people want to consume the food. So, for instance, for chicken, that might mean vacuum packing individual breasts so that the rest can be put in the freezer. I also think, you know, the caller mentioned buying things in bulk versus smaller quantities being a little bit more expensive. And that's an issue that a lot of people face. Even if you have a big family that does eat the same food, a lot of people are shopping at these box stores where there are bulk purchases that seem much less expensive per ounce. But the truth is, if all of that food doesn't get consumed, you might be better off paying a little bit more per ounce, and you might actually save money that way.
Right. And of course, there are things that, you know, you open a 5-pound can of nuts and you know, you have to use it within a certain amount of time before it gets stale regardless.
That's right. And I think the other strategy to really go for in that situation is making sure you're storing food as well as you can. And that kind of goes back to the freezer. And nuts can actually be put in the freezer and they'll last quite a bit longer if you do that.
So you suggest that we start to determine our habits and our patterns and maybe where our trouble spots are with something that you call a food audit. Can you talk about what we should be making note of?
Sure. You know, it's akin to, for instance, keeping a food diary for people trying to lose weight. And really what it's about is customizing a plan for you. It's very difficult to see how much food we're wasting, and most people think they're wasting less than they are. In fact, a national survey by Johns Hopkins found that 75% of Americans think they waste less than the average American, which if you stop and think about is kind of a funny statistic. So the waste audit is really, it doesn't have to be a lot of work. What it really means is taking a chart, and we have a chart that you can just photocopy in the book, and putting it right next to your garbage or your compost bin. And then each time you throw food out for a week or two, just jotting down, you know, what you're throwing out, why you're throwing it out, and about how much you paid for that food. And at the end of those 2 weeks, you have a great snapshot to tell you not only what you're throwing out, but maybe get a sense of why. You know, do you wind up cooking too big portions, or did you buy a bunch of stuff in the store that you ultimately never used? And also get a sense of how much it's costing you.
Why are shopping lists such a magical tool to keep us from overbuying? Because theoretically, you can make your list and then buy 9 other items.
That's true. It does help to stick to your shopping list. But, well, actually, about 55% of grocery store purchases are unplanned.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a remarkable statistic. And so, you know, a shopping list just gives you a head start at that. It really, you know, having you stop and think before you're in the store about what you actually need and what you want to cook that week. And I recommend while you're doing that to think about your specific week ahead. You know, do you have an event on Wednesday and you're not really going to be able to cook? And really identify exact, you know, think a little more specifically about what you need to buy and when you're going to eat it. I find that for myself, I tend to only cook about or plan for about 2 meals at a time, because the truth is I have these lazy nights that happen, and they happen quite often. And so just trying to limit the amount of surplus that I'm buying helps. And using a shopping list can really help to do that.
Dana Gunders is with us. She's a staff scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, specializing in food waste reduction. Her new book is Waste Free Kitchen Handbook, a guide to eating well and saving money by wasting less food. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter. My handle is @ChrisBoydThink.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now for the Doctor of Liberal Studies degree beginning in the fall of 2016. A customizable evening graduate program for working professionals. More at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Dana Gunders of the Natural Resources Defense Council about her new book, Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook, a guide to eating well and saving money by wasting less food. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. You've already mentioned that, you know, meal planning can play into smart shopping, but it needs to be strategic meal planning so that we think, you know, if we make something that has tomato sauce on Monday, we know that we can throw that leftover tomato sauce into the soup we're making on Wednesday, that sort of thing. There needs to be kind of a cascade effect across the week.
That's true. That is absolutely the most effective way to do meal planning. And the great thing about meal planning is that not only does it help you waste less, it can help you eat healthier and save you time over the course of your week. So it certainly has other benefits. Now, most people hear that and they think about sitting down on Sunday for 2 hours with a cookbook and then run the other direction. And that's really not what meal planning has to be. I recommend that you think about one or two meals that you tend to eat a lot. My husband and I keep a list of about 15, and we just sort of cycle through that list. And we know which meals, you know, we kind of know what they take to cook, and we also know which meals should follow that because they can use up some similar ingredients. Another good strategy is to just at the beginning of the week create a vegetable medley, for instance, and you can cook that up and then use it, you know, as a side one night, and the next night it can be part of your taco mix, and then, you know, if there's still some left over, you can throw it into a soup later on. So thinking kind of double duty about the ingredients is a good part of meal planning.
It made me feel so much better to hear you say that you have some kind of go-to meals. In our house, we've got about 9 ways to do lentil soup, and everybody likes them, and they're all fine. But, you know, you go online, and people post what they've cooked, and it seems like other people never make the same recipe twice, and it's probably not true in most households.
I don't think that's true in most households. I think the vast majority of people have sort of their standard go-to meals, and then every once in a while they break out. And that's a good way to go. You know, it really, we are in the end creatures of habit, and we're also busy people. So trying to be super inventive every day of the week is just not realistic for most of us.
Let's go to the phones now. We have Maggie on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Maggie.
Hello.
Hi.
I am an organic gardener, and one of the things you learn as a gardener is that you can't eat everything as it comes along. You have surplus. So I have taught myself canning things and techniques for freezing food so that it is, you know, like you say, you have some things you have to fry or blanch before you freeze them. Other things you can just stick straight in. But the other part of that is drying it down during the off season. And I actually started something this year. A friend told me about she's doing a no spend month to try to keep from spending money on lots of stuff. But I'm just making myself go to my freezer and my pantry to use things that otherwise would be in the way when this spring's crops are coming in. And I'm having some wonderful meals of things I forgot were in there that I can combine and recombine. But anything that I have that's surplus that has to go out goes in the compost. So I don't feel like it's completely off the table as far as being useful here.
These are some interesting ideas. Thanks so much for your call, Maggie. Anything you want to comment on there, Dana?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, in general, gardeners have a much closer connection to their food, right? Because you spend all that time growing it. And there's lots of great things that come out of that. Finding ways to use the surplus is excellent. Things like freezing and canning. Canning is actually a much easier activity than those of us who have never tried it may think. The first time I tried it, I was shocked by how straightforward it really was. But gardeners also have a great perspective on what food looks like. You know, when you go into a grocery store, everything looks perfect. It's perfectly round. It's perfectly orange or red or whatever it's supposed to be. And that's not how everything grows on the tree. And, you know, I know for myself, I couldn't sell, you know, 3/4 of what I grow in my garden. And so that's actually a whole nother thing that's creating waste in the food system is our sort of tendency to buy very perfectly looking fruits and vegetables. And I think gardeners are willing to go outside of that a little bit. The last thing that Maggie mentioned was composting. And composting is a wonderful thing to do with food that you can't do anything else with. But I certainly encourage everyone to try to stop and think before you do that about what else could be done with that food. So for gardeners with surplus out there, there's a website that you can go to called ampleharvest.org. And what they do is help you find a food pantry nearby where you can bring some of the surplus from your garden. And that can allow those who have trouble finding enough food to eat to get some of your great fresh fruits and veggies.
It's remarkable how many parts of food that we're in the habit of cutting or trimming away that are perfectly edible and pretty delicious. Like, I feel like my life changed when I ate beet greens for the first time. I don't much care for beets, but I love the tops.
It's true. And, you know, the stalks of broccolis are actually quite delicious. My niece refuses to eat the flowery part of broccoli. She will only eat the stalks because she insists that they're sweeter.
So there might be things that we can look into that we could eat that we've been throwing away without realizing.
That's right. And actually, in the book, we have a whole reference section, and there's about 85 different foods in there that you can look up and learn how to store them, about how long they last, but also which parts are edible on the food. So it turns out that, for instance, the green tops of strawberries actually are edible. Now, they don't taste very good, but you can save yourself some work if you're making a smoothie and throw them in there, and it'll add to the vitamin C.
What's this about sautéing lettuce?
So we saute all our other greens, right? Why not lettuce? I find that lettuce is one of the most common things that goes to waste in our homes. And often it's not bad. It just may be a little bit wilted, or, you know, the tips may be a little yellow. And even those bags of mixed greens that maybe have one or two leaves that get a little slimy, if you just take those out, rinse it off, can be sautéed, and it's actually delicious.
Does this work for iceberg lettuce or just like romaine and the heartier, greener lettuces?
Well, it works for iceberg lettuce, but because iceberg has so much water in it, it kind of boils down to almost nothing, but you can still use it.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. We have Paul on the line in Rockwall. Hey, Paul.
Yes, this is fascinating. Since our children are all grown now, we've downsized down to two. And most of the recipes that you see are scaled like for 6 to 8 people. And that always presents a problem in that how in the world do you make something that is really nice and neat and yet you don't end up with a refrigerator full of food that you're either going to stare at forever or else you're going to have to figure out when in the world are you actually going to eat the rest of this.
Yeah, it's tough to eat the same dinner 6 nights in a row.
That's true. Well, that kind of goes back again to sort of how the food world that we live in is scaled up a little bit. And it's not all that friendly for people living, you know, with one or two people in the household. But there are some great tools. You know, there are several of the recipe sites on the internet that are out there now allow you to put in the number of servings that you'd like, and then they will adjust the recipe for that. Of course, it's hard to make, you know, half an egg, but for some things that works. And I think the other option is to cook, you know, a small version of the recipe as you can, but then take the rest and put it directly into the freezer because, you know, you'll be able to have it 1 to 2 weeks later when you're in the mood for it again.
Can ingredients at the end of their usable lives be added to a recipe that might then stay in the fridge for a while after that? For example, if I have cream that's about to go bad tomorrow, could I use it in a soup that I make tonight and then eat it as leftovers all week, or will that cream make the soup go bad sooner?
Well, I think the first thing to wonder is, are you sure the cream's going to go bad? Hmm. And what makes you think that? Because oftentimes people think that once food has passed the date on it, the use-by or sell-by or whatever that date is on the food, that it's bad. When in fact, those dates are really just the manufacturer's best guess of when it's at its best quality, at its freshest. But the food can often be eaten days, weeks, even months after that, depending on what kind of food. So that's important to know. But if if something's about to turn, it sort of depends on what the product is. Vegetables, you can cook them and they will certainly be good. Soup is a great way to use up almost anything in your refrigerator. And for dairy products, are very unlikely to get you sick. They're pasteurized. They're actually a very safe product. So as long as it tastes okay, it's fine to use.
And even if it doesn't, like truly spoiled milk, sour milk can go into something like pancakes and actually be a good ingredient and does not make the pancakes taste weird.
That's right. I'm so glad you brought that up. It's true. Soured, when milk turns and it's a bit sour, it can still be used essentially as a substitute for buttermilk in any baking recipe. So in our book, we have a handful of recipes, and one of them is for sour milk pancakes. And I've made this, I've really pushed it to the limit in terms of how sour the milk has gotten. And it's amazing that you can't taste the slightest bit of bitterness or sourness once it's in the pancake.
Do you have to like hold your nose as the chunks come pouring out of the carton, or are you just over that now?
It's advised, sure.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Susan on the line in Dallas. Hi, Susan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two comments or suggestions, one with regards to not overspending at the grocery store and one with regards to preserving foods a little better. As far as grocery shopping, I learned years ago cash is the only way to shop. I make my list and I bring cash, and I do not overspend as I normally would with a debit card. And I have found it really effective, and friends and my kids have found it effective also. And with regards to food, sometimes it's a pain, but I really try and do it. When I get home, I cut up the strawberries and put them, in a container. I cut up the broccoli and zucchini, et cetera, and put things up so they can either be eaten raw, with dips for snacks, or I can use them for, cooking throughout the week. And with lettuce, chop it up, put it in the spinner, and it stays crispy and fresh. And it's more appetizing that way than in a wilty bag.
Thanks so much for your call, Susan. Anything there you want to pick back up on, Dana?
Great suggestions. I love the cash one. I've heard that many times, that's effective. If you've ever sort of gone shopping and then gotten to the register and gone, whoa, how did I all of a sudden spend that much? I think that cash really helps to avoid that. And on cutting things, I do think that for many people, what works is when you get home from the grocery store, setting aside 30 minutes or so to actually prep some food for the week. That can really help you. It sort of lowers the bar than when you get home from work on Tuesday or Wednesday and what it's going to take to cook a meal. So that can be really effective. The only thing is that once you do cut food up, it can shorten its life. So you need to be sure you're cutting up the right amounts to match what you're actually going to be able to use.
Are you guys at the Natural Resources Defense Council lobbying to standardize use by, sell by, best by, expired by dates?
We are. We've been working on this topic for a few years now. When we sort of discovered that, wow, 9 out of 10 Americans are actually throwing food away prematurely because they don't understand the dates on food. At least occasionally, they're throwing food away prematurely, and that's adding up to be a huge portion of the food that consumers are throwing out. So we are trying to create a system that's much more standardized so that everyone can understand the meanings. Right now you go out and it might say use by, it might say best by, it might have no words at all. And the vast majority of those dates have nothing to do with the food safety. And yet there are a few products where there is a safety implication, and right now no one can really distinguish, and therefore I think people tend to throw things out because they're worried that they might get sick from it. So what we're hoping to do is create two standard dates, one that clearly indicates this is about quality, you won't get sick if you eat it after, et cetera, and the other that clearly indicates actually, this product has a little bit higher risk if you eat it after this date, so we recommend throwing it away. And just as a shortcut, the rule of thumb I like to give people is that those products that they tell pregnant women to avoid are good products to kind of actually trust the date and throw products out after.
Things like soft cheeses.
Soft cheeses, deli meats, hot dogs and sausages actually are among those as well.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. It's not your favorite way to use up food that is nearing its useful life, but you note that better than throwing it in the trash is preparing food for pets. There are some things animals, of course, our dogs and cats can eat that we would eat, and there are some things they really shouldn't eat. And you've got some lists in the book about those, but they can eat more of what we eat than we might realize.
They can. And yeah, this part is really meant to get people thinking, okay, if people aren't going to eat this, let's at least give it to animals. And that's actually a framework that the EPA set up, saying, hey, it's better to give food to people first, then to animals before throwing it out. So in the book, we include a list of what you can and can't feed to your dog. Another, if you have chickens, what you can feed to them. And chickens are a great way to use up food scraps. For cats and dogs, most foods tend to be okay. It shouldn't make up more than about 5% of their total diet because, the foods that are designed for them really have the right nutritional profile that they need. But most foods can be fed to them. The foods to avoid include avocados, grapes and raisins, and things with onions and garlic.
We're speaking this hour with Dana Gunders, who is a staff scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, specializing in food waste reduction. She's just published something called the Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook, a guide to eating well and saving money by wasting less food. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now to design your own doctoral or master's degree at SMU, specializing in organizational dynamics, human rights, and more. Details at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with scientist Dana Gunders. She specializes in food waste reduction for the Natural Resources Defense Council and has just published a book called The Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook, a guide to eating well and saving money by wasting less food. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. We have Greg on the line now in Dallas. Hello, Greg.
Hello. Well, hey, I have some suggestions on how to save food or money. One thing that I do is I have found when my recipe makes more than I can eat, I have to start cutting it in half. I know that sounds maybe dumb, but it works. So I don't get tired of it, and I can eat it before it gets nasty, and there you go. I also end up giving extra food that I fix to my neighbors. I share it with them and either impress them or not with my culinary skills. And another trick that I have used is to cut dandelion leaves from my yard, and I throw them into my salad. I read that they're 8 times more nutritious or have more phytonutrients than iceberg lettuce. Of course, everything has more nutrition than iceberg lettuce.
Those are good ideas, Greg. Thanks for your call. Dana, anything you want to respond to there?
Sure. Well, I absolutely love the sharing it with neighbors. I think that's a great great way to sort of build community along with using up any extra food. And I've also heard people tell me that before they go on vacation. They'll sort of open their fridge and look at what they won't be able to use and give that to neighbors. So that's another thing to consider. I don't know about dandelion leaves specifically, but I do think that, you know, growing food is a good way to not waste it, because when you, for instance, grow lettuce or spinach, you can just take off as many leaves as you want and the rest will stay fresh. And that's the same for fresh herbs too. Oftentimes, you know, in the store, we have to buy a big bunch of herbs and it's too many. But if we grow them at home, we can just pick off a few leaves. So that certainly is a great tactic.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Christy is on the line in Wiley now. Hi, Christy.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to let you guys, I just popped into the station. I like listening to you guys, but I just got home. And I happened to hear, and I have actually been ruthless about teaching my children this. When you get your lettuce, whether it be iceberg or like romaine or even celery, basically anything on like kind of has that little core butt, you know, from mm-hmm. where it grew onto the plant.
Right.
And you take it and you put it underneath running water and you just kind of shave off a little bit at a time and basically water your plant, right? And take a paper towel and put it in the bottom, and once it basically drains out enough to put it back in the refrigerator, don't wrap it all the way, kind of leave it a little bit open, but put the bag underneath of it with the paper towel underneath of it, and basically it keeps it hydrating. And every time you use it, of course, like you guys did catch you saying, take from your outside leaves in, and if you need to, trim that bottom a little bit so that way, because it makes a scab. It's a plant, so it's going to make a scab, and no water's going to get in there. And I've had actually celery last me from Thanksgiving, leftover from Thanksgiving, until the end of January. It'd still be crispy in the refrigerator. And I've actually did a bunch of different things. The other thing is either romaine or celery, you could put them in like a little Tupperware container, or even say you rinse your washer buttercups or whatever, and put it in the windowsill and put those down in the bottom, put the base of the plant down the bottom with a tiny bit of water, your romaine and your celery will start growing again. And if they're wilted in the fridge, again, trim off the bottom and give them some water. Let them stand in a cup of water on the counter and your celery will come right back to crispy again.
Thank you so much for your call, Christy. And Dana, there are lots, it turns out, as Christy implied, there are lots of things that we think have sort of stopped being fresh that can be revived with just a little bit of TLC.
It's true. Well, certainly the trick of kind of giving some of the plants, vegetables that you buy water can be effective. And you can do that in the door of your refrigerator because that helps you kind of stand things up in jars. So you can put asparagus in jars, celery, as she mentioned, carrots. That is a great storage technique if you have the room. And then if they do wilt, then yes, you can actually soak them in a bowl of ice water for 5 to 10 minutes, and that will effectively reintroduce the water into the plants and help them crisp back up.
So it's always disappointing to find, you know, you open your pantry and find that the potatoes have sprouted and turned green. They're not good to eat if they've turned green, but they could maybe be planted in the garden.
That's right. And actually, in the book, we have a whole list of sort of what can happen to food and which types of things are generally harmless and which are better to steer clear of. And green potatoes are one of those things to steer clear of. So don't eat them if they're green, but you can cut them up and into little chunks and put them in your garden and they will grow back to become a whole new crop of potatoes. And as the caller mentioned, there are other foods that you can actually use to regenerate foods as well. The bottom of onions and scallions can be used. Celery, as she mentioned, as well. And we have a list of that in the book, too.
Is there a time of year when that stuff has to get planted? Is it, you know, late winter, early spring the ideal time?
Well, gosh, I'm not sure about in Dallas because I don't live there. And I think it also depends on the food. But typically, most foods are best planted in the spring. And then, you know, some of those can even be done indoors, though, and then it gives you a little more flexibility.
All right. Let's go back to the phones now. We have Jackie on the line in Denton. Hey, Jackie.
Hi. Love the subject.
Thank you.
For keeping vegetables fresh, I live alone. I use the green bags. I bought mine online, but I've seen them in those grocery stores, and they're specific for that use. And you don't wash the vegetables ahead of time. When you bring them home, you put them in the green bag and close it up and store it in the refrigerator until you use it up. I've had vegetables last month in there. The other item I wanted to mention is, because I live alone and there are recipes that I enjoy that serve at 4 or 8 or 10, I've gotten together with some girlfriends of mine. They're also coincidentally all live alone or they're widows and love to cook. And once a month we get together and we make our favorite dish that we wouldn't ordinarily make because it makes so much. And we share a little bit at dinner that night, and then all of the leftovers.
I love that idea.
Divided up.
So everybody takes some home, is that right?
Everybody takes some home and has another meal off of it. We call it Leftover Tuesdays.
That's a great idea. What do you think about that, Dana?
I love it. I think we should all do that, whether we're single or not.
Yeah, you get some variety that you don't have to cook yourself. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I'm not sure about exactly which green bag she was describing for her vegetables, but certainly, you know, each type of vegetable actually has its own way to store it best, and fruits as well, and other foods for that matter. So it is useful to look into specifically what is the best way to store it. And so there are some products on the market that are very specific to certain products. There's, you know, like special Tupperware for berries or something, you know, of that nature, herbs. And in the book, we have a whole section where you can look up, you know, for strawberries, for instance, the best way to store them is to put them all on a single layer. And if you can't do that, to cover a single layer with a paper towel and then put another layer on top of that, and that will help them last longer.
And those crisper drawers in the fridge, there is actually a science to them, and different kinds of produce need different amounts of humidity, and it may not have to do with these are vegetables, they go in this drawer, and these are fruits, and they go in that one.
That's right. And, you know, when I first started researching this book, I really got to sort of answer all these questions that I had always wondered, what are those drawers for anyways, right? But essentially, they create a different humidity and temperature zone in the refrigerator. And for foods that tend to wilt, like carrots and lettuce and broccoli, those are best stored in a high humidity zone. And so you can set one drawer to high, or maybe it says vegetables, and put it in there. And if you set the other drawer to low, that's better. That allows for a little more aeration into that drawer. And that's better for products that produce ethylene, which is a gas that ripens foods. And it's produced when foods are ripe, and it ripens that stuff around it. So for apples, for instance, or pears and avocados after they're ripe, they're best stored in a drawer with lower humidity, or set to the fruit setting. Or if you don't have any settings, then you can crack that drawer open a little bit more.
An email from Tom asks, why do grocery stores mist water on their produce to keep it fresh? I find it causes food to spoil faster as in days. Tom likes to bring green veggies home, rinse them, and then put them in the spinner to get rid of excess moisture, then bag them with a paper towel so that the paper towel can absorb that moisture.
I will tell you, this is a source of frustration for me as well, Tom, because it's true. You know, wet products tend to spoil more quickly, but I think they look fresher in the store, and they kind of feel fresher as well. It keeps them crisp and looking good on the shelf, and so that's why they do it. But I do recommend that when you buy food, you shake that water off right away. And I think drying it off even further when you get it home is a great idea for having it last longer.
You noted the book, and I'd never thought about this, that it also makes them weigh a little bit more. So if we're paying by the ounce or by the pound, that water is going to be on our tab.
That's true.
All right, let's go next to Ruth in Dallas. Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Okay. I had a solution for leftover vegetables or leftover food at each meal. Mm-hmm. So I kept this container in the freezer, and each meal I would put the leftovers there. And after a week or so, I would take it out and make a soup. And it turned out to be very good base for a soup. You can either, grind it all up, or you can just put it in and let it cook. And mashed potatoes makes a good thickening agent. Hmm. And it was really tasty. My family liked it.
Well, thank you so much for that idea, Ruth. Dana, soup really is kind of a miracle food in that it's forgiving and you can make it nutritious with whatever you've got around.
It is. Some people talk about refrigerator soup being one of their favorite meals to cook. And that is take everything that you're not sure what to do with in your refrigerator and put it in. There are some other great kind of catch-all recipes. Frittatas are good for sort of taking little bits of different vegetables and meat that you might have and cheese and putting it all together. Tacos, actually, most people think of tacos as a very Mexican food, but really you can put almost anything in a tortilla and call it tacos, worldly tacos. And then, of course, stir fries are great uses as well.
And you're a fan of nights where you just kind of clean out the fridge, decide that you're not going to cook, and just eat little bits of things here and there.
That's right. I think one of the earlier callers was talking about a no-spend month or something like that. And I like to sort of challenge us to go an extra day or two before we really need to go shopping in order to eat down what we already have. And a lot of times I think what brings people into the store are wanting to buy more fresh fruits and vegetables. And then they wind up buying a bunch of other stuff while they're there. And so I think if you want to really kind of eat down what you have, one good thing to have on hand are frozen vegetables, because they help sort of bridge that gap between when you run out of fresh veggies and when you really need to go to the store, and then you can use everything up while you're there. And it turns out that frozen vegetables have, generally speaking, a pretty equivalent nutrient profile to fresh vegetables. In fact, for some of them, it's even better because they are harvested within just a few hours. I'm sorry, they're frozen within just a few hours of being harvested, and then their nutrients are preserved, whereas it can take a few days, even a week, to get some fresh produce to the store and then, into our homes. And by the time we eat it, it's actually lost some of its nutrition.
Are you cooking tonight?
I am going to cook tonight.
What's on the menu?
Chicken enchiladas are on the menu. They're one of my make at the beginning of the week, and then we have them all week.
And always a crowd pleaser. Sounds good. Dana Gunders is a staff scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, specializing in food waste reduction. Her book is Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook, a guide to eating well and saving money by wasting less food. Dana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. We had help on the phones today from Braylon Becton. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.